So, we went on from Vrindavan to Delhi, and Prabhupada had planned to do more preaching in Delhi. He started off by meeting the American ambassador to India, Mr. Kenneth Keating, arranged a meeting. And we all piled into a car and went to the ambassador's residence and office. And Prabhupada explained to him very simply that he was wearing a striped suit, Mr. Keating. So Prabhupada said, just as you are not known as Mr. Striped Suit, so similarly, I am not Indian, you are not American, but we're all servants of Krishna. And he explained, Prabhupada explained, that the soul transmigrates through 8,400,000 species of life. And Mr. Keating actually said that he believed in transmigration of the soul. American ambassador. And Prabhupada went on emphasizing this point and how in America there was so much frustration among the young people because there wasn't this understanding of basic spiritual principles. And Mr. Keating was very impressed by the young American men and women who had taken up Krishna consciousness. And Mr. Keating made this comment, it was quite interesting. When Swami Rajanandaji was here, I asked him his definition of God. And he thought a minute and said, well, I would say God is the thread which links one good person to another. I thought that was a very interesting definition. Prabhupada's response was, that is stated in Bhagavad Gita. You have a pearl necklace and it is strung on a thread. So all the pearls are resting on that thread. Everyone is resting in God. Not that only good men should be resting on that thread, but actually God is the origin, the source of everything. So rather than contradict this Swami, who had a kind of nebulous understanding of God, Prabhupada elaborated on it. And at the end, the ambassador said that he had to move from the sublime to the mundane. He had other appointments to keep. And before Prabhupada kind of said goodbye to him, he said, Prabhupada said, I'm also coming to the mundane point of view. Next time I come back to the USA, I would like to meet the President of the United States. And Mr. Keating offered to write a letter to help Prabhupada meet the President, which never happened, unfortunately. But that evening, Prabhupada wrote this letter to a disciple. You may be pleased to know that this morning I met here in Delhi with your American ambassador to India, Mr. Kenneth Keating. He has got very good respect for our movement, and he has promised to help me to arrange a meeting with your president when I shall return to your country, perhaps in the late spring. I have requested him to help this movement, and that help will save your country from great danger by turning hippies into happies. Let us see what can be done. So, as a photographer, I was actually there for that meeting with Mr. Keating, and one little side note was that the ambassador was so gracious that he accompanied us to our car, which was an ambassador, and Prabhupada got in the front seat with the driver, and there were six of us left that had to squeeze into the back seat. So as the ambassador was looking on, he saw one person after another pile into on top of each other in the back seat, and then we drove off. But he was very gracious even then. He didn't comment on it or even make an expression that would make us feel embarrassed about our situation. So not long after that, this war starts. It's an all-out war that Pakistan attacked India at this time. And there was a blackout called for by the government in Delhi, which meant that no lights at all were allowed in any part of the city because they didn't want to give any point where Pakistani bombs could be dropped. They were hoping that the Pakistani didn't have any information of where Delhi was if it wasn't lit up. So, there's a picture here. Who has seen this picture before?
Yes.
Okay, almost everybody. I'd like to tell you that sometimes it's very interesting to hear the background of this picture. This was taken on a morning walk in Delhi during this war, and Prabhupada has paused in his walk to read the headlines to see the progress of the war. He was very concerned, actually, about what was going on. And ordinarily, he never bothered with newspapers, but at this time, he would regularly keep in touch with what was going on through the newspapers. And this is what, so the headlines were, emergency declared, three enemy planes downed. Pakistan launched a massive attack on the Western Front, bombing seven Indian airfields and crossing the ceasefire line in strength and punch. The Prime Minister, in her broadcast late tonight, described it as a full-scale war launched by Pakistan against India. Earlier, the President had declared a national emergency. So the Prime Minister, Indira Gandhi, went on broadcast on the radio and spoke about the peril to the country. And Prabhupada, you know, he had lived through World War II in Calcutta. And he was just not at all fearful. He was very calm through the whole thing. He predicted that the war would be very short and that Pakistan would lose. And he told us, on the 12th of December, 1942, I remember, there was heavy bombing all over Calcutta. By once or twice bombing, all the population vacated Calcutta. It was a city of no people. But somehow or other, I had to remain there. I was just eating, and there was siren of bombing. Ki chum! Like that, so many bombings. So what can be done? There may be so many dangers in our life because it is the place full of dangers. So it didn't affect Prabhupada, so it really didn't affect us. We just went on with our activities, which basically Prabhupada couldn't preach very much because the city was under siege. But he went on with his classes, his morning and evening classes. And because it was winter, it was dark both in the morning and the evenings. And because the city was besieged, stores were generally shut. It was very difficult to get anything. So I had a tape recorder that I had been taping Prabhupada's classes, but the batteries ran out. I didn't have a way to plug it in, and there were no batteries available. So I started to try to write notes in Prabhupada's classes. But because there was a blackout, we only had one candle. It was a fairly large room. There was one candle on the altar. And I couldn't sit close enough to the altar to illuminate my pad. So I couldn't write. So the only thing I could do was listen. That was all that was left, the only option. So I would sit very straight, you know, and just say, I'm going to remember everything that Prabhupada says. Because I didn't have any tools to do anything else. And I would focus on each word, you know, and really concentrate. It was what they call rapt attention. And then I would leave, and I'd feel myself filled with this philosophy that he had presented. And I met Jamuna, who was nursing a devotee who was sick, Palika. And she asked me, you know, what Prabhupada say? And I was completely blank. Like, I couldn't remember a single point. Not only couldn't I remember a single point, I couldn't even remember the topic that Prabhupada was speaking about. I was just flabbergasted. I didn't know what was going on. You know, maybe I'd become a zombie. I just got initiated to become a zombie. So the next morning, I redoubled my efforts. I did the same thing, but now I'm going to be able to say, you know, what he said and order the points he made. And the exact same thing happened the next day. I was just like, I didn't know what was going on. And finally, the only thing I could figure out was I was so overwhelmed just with Prabhupada's presence that nothing else would, like, enter. That was all that I could come out with, was Prabhupada's presence was enormous. So that was a very unusual experience for me. Then, what happened was that one evening Prabhupada asked his disciples to speak, and he asked Sudama Vipra, who I pointed out in one of the earlier pictures, the sannyasi. And Vrindavan Vipra said, we may see a leper or some other diseased person and feel sorry for his suffering. But a pure devotee feels sorry to see any living entity that is without Krishna consciousness. A pure devotee sees that anyone lacking spiritual knowledge is in a suffering condition. So Prabhupada was sitting listening to him with his eyes closed, and when he made this point, Prabhupada let out a very deep, melodious hum, which I understood he very much appreciated this point that Sudama Vipra Maharaj made. And then it was almost like Prabhupada was saying, this boy has understood some point, some Krishna conscious point. And then another evening, Prabhupada asked for questions after his lecture. And I asked Prabhupada, what happens to the soul of a vegetable or a flower that's been offered to Krishna? And Prabhupada's reply was, the soul becomes liberated. So I asked, you know, what does that mean? What kind of liberation is that? And Prabhupada said it means that that soul enters a human body and he can continue his devotional service in that body. It skips over all the millions of interim bodies and becomes. That's what liberation means, at least in the context he was talking about. So, as Prabhupada predicted, the war was quite short. December 17th, the headlines of the Indian Express read, Pakistan surrenders, Bangladesh is free. And India decided on a unilateral ceasefire. So Prabhupada was very happy. He told the devotees confidentially that the reason the war had ended so quickly was because of their massive Sankirtan Yajna at the Pandal in Delhi a month earlier. And then Prabhupada went on. We went from there to Jayapur. And this is we had another pandal in Jayapur. Originally, two women had gone, Kaushalya and Srimati, had gone to Jayapur to arrange for making deities, large deities. The devotees went to Jayapur to have these deities carved. And while they were there, Srimati had her passport expired, perhaps, and she had to wait there for some time to get her paperwork together. They couldn't move. And some supporters had asked how they could help. And so they said, well, let's have a pandal. We'll invite Prabhupada and he can come and speak. So they actually did that. They arranged a pandal. And at first Prabhupada was full of praise for these two women, saying that Indian women just are housewives. They just sit around, but American women sort of have so much industriousness. And then Prabhupada saw that the pandal wasn't actually ready. And he saw the advertisements which said, Prabhupada's coming with foreign disciples, and he didn't like that. He wanted the advertisements to say American and European disciples. So he was a little bit critical of these women at this time. And they were chastised by him and very sorry that they had failed in different ways. So the devotees raced around to correct these different problems, and then Prabhupada became of a quite different mood. He told them, I chastise you because it is my duty. Disciple is related to discipline, so it is my duty to my disciples. Otherwise, I'm not upset with anyone. I simply do this to discipline you because you are my disciples. He said that they were sincere and lacked expertise because of poor upbringing. The devotees present felt Srila Prabhupada was wonderfully expressing to them a bit of what he, as spiritual master, felt in training them. So here, this is Jamuna bathing the deities, small deities, and by this bathing, the large deities were installed, which are now Radha Govinda. They're worshipped in Brooklyn Temple. And Prabhupada watches as she does this Abhishek at the pandal. This one was not as big as the others, thousands, but compared to the ones in Delhi and Bombay, it was smaller. This is Prabhupada. He was given by the Queen of Jayapur, he was given a room right on the Govindaji property. And he very much enjoyed that and would see the worship of Rupa Goswami's Govindaji deity regularly. He's also in his rooms signing a letter. At this time, Tamala Krishna, as I mentioned, was a grihastha, and he decided that he wanted to increase his service by taking sannyas. And it became a point of controversy because he was fairly newly married. His wife was a very nice, sweet devotee, very dedicated to Krishna consciousness and to him. And Prabhupada repeatedly told Tamala Krishna Maharaj that his wife, Madri, was also his disciple. And he had a responsibility towards Madri to make sure that she was happy and well-situated in Krishna consciousness. And he didn't feel it was fair for her, for Tamal, to take sannyas. And Tamal was very insistent, very determined, and felt that Prabhupada was simply testing him. Everybody else felt that Prabhupada was saying no, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj felt that Prabhupada was testing him. And so this went back and forth, and it lasted through quite a number of weeks. And finally what happened was, Prabhupada was on the Vyasasan once, and I guess he was thinking about this. He called Tamal Krishna Maharaj over to him and said it would be too hurtful for Madri. She would suffer too much. And Tamal Krishna says that, well, if I take it now, she'll suffer, and when I take it later, she'll suffer. There'll never be a time when she doesn't suffer. So I might as well take it now. So, somehow or other, the way it's portrayed in the Leelamrita is a little different from what I and a few of the other women experienced. The way it's portrayed here is that the women had a coalition and they felt it was unfair to Madri and they went to Prabhupada, you know, as a group. But actually it was Malati who went to Prabhupada and said it was very difficult for Madri and so on and so forth. But what happened was that at this same pandal, Tamal Krishna Maharaj became Maharaj. He gave up his grihastha ashram and became a sannyasi. There are actually many, many pictures of it. I just didn't happen to have any in my computer. And at that time, he started traveling and preaching throughout India. Oh, and also, Prabhupada would tell some of the women that were there that were interested in deity worship to study the worship at the different temples in Jayapur. And that is where we learned how to offer this little bit of, we take a Q-tip dipped in oil at the end of each mangalarti. We learned that from the example that they said in Jayapur, doing that little tidbit of information. Let's see. So Prabhupada riding on a procession here in Jayapur. Those are two magnificent oxen on the left and right. If there was less light, you could see it better. And this is a program that we held there. So from there, we went on to, after some time, we went to Madras. Giriraj had gone on to Madras with a few others, and he had organized yet another pandal in Madras. So we went south, and our host was Mr. Balu. He actually opened his home to us, all the devotees, and Srila Prabhupada lived there. And Mr. Balu was not a Vaishnava in the way that we know Vaishnavas. He had one thin black vertical line that went he put on his forehead every day. And Prabhupada questioned him because that's not the traditional mark of a Vaishnava. And Mr. Balu said, my guru asked me to wear this mark. Prabhupada replied was, he may ask, but it must be confirmed in the scriptures. Mr. Balu said, I follow my guru blindly. Prabhupada said, no, what the guru says must be confirmed by the scriptures and the sadhus. The guru cannot say anything that is not confirmed. If he does, then he is not guru. Mr. Balu says, I do not know anything but the words of my guru. So Mr. Balu wouldn't budge, and I was a little worried at that point that he would be offended by Prabhupada, but he wasn't at all offended. Yet he entirely missed the point, unfortunately. And Prabhupada let it go. So, let's see. Our host does not budge, and I worry that Srila Prabhupada's challenge has disturbed him, but it hasn't. Balu leaves the room smiling and, unfortunately, oblivious to the glory of an unsentimental adherence to bona fide authority in all things, big and small. Srila Prabhupada draws on a seemingly inexhaustible supply of scriptural knowledge backed up by Sanskrit verses that he quotes from memory. Balu's stubbornness frightens me as much as my own ignorance weighs on me. I wonder if I'll ever know enough to properly decide what is to be done and what is not to be done. By his wholehearted submission to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, clearly Srila Prabhupada has been awarded a wondrous ability to be in the world without a tinge of worldliness. Ironically, by surrendering, one does not relinquish one's individual judgment and responsibility, but truly finds them. Our stance is like that of a rebellious 2-year-old. So I went to Madras without Gadabari. Gadabari stayed in Bombay. He was working on a Bengali Back to Godhead magazine, the first one. And it was quite remarkable because he didn't speak a word of Bengali. And the next remarkable thing that happened was that we went to visit somebody named Dr. Radhakrishna. How many people know the name Dr. Radhakrishna? Dr. Radhakrishna was formerly president of India, and he was a great Mayavadi scholar, and he wrote a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And before Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita was published, he actually used Dr. Radhakrishna's Bhagavad Gita in 26 Second Avenue in New York City. But only the translations, because the commentary by Dr. Radhakrishna was filled with Mayavadi philosophy, which outraged and enraged Srila Prabhupada. Especially the Prabhupada mentioned the purport to text 34 of the ninth verse, where Krishna says, "Always think of me, become my devotee." And in his commentary, Dr. Radhakrishna said, "It's not to Krishna that we surrender, but the unknown, unborn within Krishna." Problem is that he's such a fool, he doesn't know there's no difference between Krishna's within and without. But he was living in Madras at this time, this Dr. Radhakrishna, and we went with Srila Prabhupada to visit him. And that was a very remarkable occasion. So, Dr. Radhakrishna's home, we sit on the floor in front of Srila Prabhupada, who sits on a semicircular couch covered in a rust orange velvet. After 10 minutes, a slight, short, bent old man with a cane in one hand and the other on the arm of a prim nurse slowly enters with tiny, shuffling steps. His nurse helps him sit on a stiff-backed wooden chair near Srila Prabhupada. Partially paralyzed, he trembles. He had a stroke or some such thing and did not recover fully. Once he is seated, Srila Prabhupada, also seated, leans forward and addresses Radhakrishna with exceptional sympathy. His words reach towards something alive inside a decrepit prison. Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna, God, is a person, the Supreme Person, from whom all energy comes. Srila Prabhupada says that it is not that energy is the source of God, but that God is the source of all energy. Krishna, Srila Prabhupada says, is in the world as the cause and essence of all things. He is the common principle of existence that fills everything and is diminished by nothing. Yet above all, he is a person. Not a person like us, for we are embodied souls. Krishna's form is all spiritual. And we can personally relate with him by serving him with love, and without material motivation. So as Prabhupada's talking, Dr. Radhakrishna raises his head a little bit and looks directly at Prabhupada, very attentive. His face shows a hunger, a need for a pure thing, a glimmer, an appeal, a bright desperation is in his eye. Then after just a few minutes, the nurse interrupts. "The doctor is tired now and must rest. Thank you for kindly visiting him." Loneliness and sorrow again bend Dr. Radhakrishna's head, a seeker gone pitifully astray. With his nurse's help, he stands and slowly, silently shuffles to a back room. And Prabhupada was very moved by this meeting. Several times he mentioned that, maybe twice he mentioned that, because Dr. Radhakrishna denied Krishna's form, Krishna has no eyes, he has no, you know, senses. Krishna responded by taking away Dr. Radhakrishna's ability to have senses.
He
couldn't speak. He was unable to speak. He could hardly walk.
generations of Percy brothers came from Jack.
So another thing that happened in Madras is that we have this ironclad caste system there. And but they felt one is in a particular caste according to one's birth. And Prabhupada used all the weight of the authority of the Shastras to smash that idea. And to me it was also the answer to that very abusive time in the Calcutta temple where we had this intense gender issue. And one thing I could point out, at this Delhi Pandal, before we went to Vrindavan, I neglected to mention this, but there was, the system was that there would be a kirtan, and then Prabhupada would come in time for the arti, so there'd be kirtan during the arti. And then Prabhupada would speak, and then there'd be a final kirtan before we all went back to our ashram. And the men were vying with each other to lead these first kirtans, the one before the arti, and then especially the one when Prabhupada was there. And then after the lecture, Prabhupada would repeatedly ask Jamuna to lead the kirtan. And because she had not only a wonderful voice, but she also had an ability to engage the audience in the holy name. So Jamuna at some point became aware of the intensity of the men's desire to lead the kirtan. And because she's, you know, not a very aggressive person, she thought, well, let them lead us, you know, I don't mind. So she wanted to just decline from that service of leading the final kirtan. And Prabhupada didn't have that in mind at all. So he would say, thank you very much, and he'd pick up his kartals at the end of the lecture. And he would give her a little nod. She was at the other end of the stage. Okay, now, you know, it's your turn. Take over to lead. And Jamuna pointed, you know, to her throat. She had a terrible throat. There's no question of leading. And Prabhupada just ignored that signal. It was very clear what she was indicating. Just ignored it and said, go ahead. And again, she said, you know, this is not possible. And he just ignored that and said, you know, lead. So she led this kirtan. And my thought was that had not Prabhupada been so insistent, the men would have very readily jumped in and done that service instead of Jamuna. And I was thinking that I can imagine that Prabhupada appreciates here that the men are gentlemanly enough to allow the women to lead regularly. My hope is that that gives Prabhupada great pleasure, based especially on this experience that I had there. Although it's wonderful to do that service, it's also very cultured and gentlemanly to let others do it, especially women who tend not to be so aggressive and forward, although they do enjoy that time of leading. So I wanted to thank you all for doing that. Thank you for that arrangement here in front of production. Appreciate that. So there's a time here, let's see. Just go on for a few more minutes. So Prabhupada in Madras, he met with somebody named Raj Gopalacharya, who was a very high executive, the first chief executive after India's independence, and very sympathetic to Prabhupada's movement. So this Rajaji, he had one doubt. Prabhupada created this huge institution, and now his disciples might identify with the institution rather than with Krishna. If that were to happen, then by identifying with the institution, they would again fall into the same type of materialism or false identification as before. Prabhupada replied that because Krishna is absolute, Krishna and Krishna's institution are non-different. To identify with Krishna's institution was to identify with Krishna directly. So this Rajaji was very satisfied by the answer, and they parted as friends. Then there was another time in Madras. Giriraj had cultivated some chief justices, and one of them, his name was Viraswami, and he gave to our little Saraswati, who was traveling with us, he gave her a silver murti, solid silver murti of Krishna. And Prabhupada felt that she was too young to have that murti. And he wanted to replace that murti with another one, a wooden one. So what he did was, when Saraswati wasn't looking, he took that murti and hid it. And then he asked her, so where's Krishna? And she went looking all over for her murti and became very concerned. She couldn't find it. In anxiety, Saraswati replied, I don't know, someone took him. Prabhupada, where is Krishna? Saraswati, I don't know. Is he under the cushion, Prabhupada suggested. And Saraswati ran over to the cushion Prabhupada pointed to. She picked it up, but Krishna was not there. Is he on the shelf? Prabhupada asked. So Saraswati ran to the shelf. Where is Krishna? And Saraswati was going to all the devotees. And Prabhupada recited this verse, Hey Radhe, Rajadeva ki, Chalalite, Hey Nanda Sumanta. It was the mood of the Goswamis, always looking, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And finally someone, one of the devotees, I think it was her father, Shamsundar, said, Saraswati, who has Krishna? Who has Krishna? And then Saraswati's eyes got big and she said, Prabhupada has Krishna. So she went over to Prabhupada and he produced this other wooden Krishna that he actually wanted her to have. And then she was very satisfied and happy. So Prabhupada made this philosophical point and also managed to arrange for Saraswati's worship to be more appropriate. Now, one thing is that this Mr. Balu and his wife that we were staying with as our hosts, they were a bit perhaps prakriti sahajiyas. On the last night before we were going to go, Mr. Balu and his wife came to Prabhupada's room in their own home. And they said to him, please explain to us, please recite the Rasa Lila pastime from the 10th canto. And Prabhupada said, that's the most exalted of all Krishna's pastimes. It's for liberated souls to recite and to hear. Otherwise, we'll confuse it with something mundane. And Mr. Balu said, my wife and I are very enthusiastic. You please must recite Rasa Lila. And Prabhupada said, to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, you begin from the first canto, the lotus feet of the Lord, and then gradually you come to the 10th canto, you don't jump to the smiling face of the Lord. When one is completely free of all material attachments to wife, family, home, and money, then you can hear Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So Mr. Bala was listening, and with folded hands he said, Swamiji, my wife and I plead with you, please recite Rasa Lila. And Prabhupada responded, you may be fit to hear Rasa Lila, but I do not feel that I am qualified to speak it, so please ask someone else. I am moved to the core. Krishna's affairs are his private sanctified pleasure and cannot be entered by storm. If I am ever allowed there, it will be by unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service. By a submissive attitude of doing whatever I can do for him and asking nothing in return. Without such a mentality, I will see the light of a match and confuse it for the sun. I will confuse iron for gold, lust for love. In just a moment, I can forget who I am, who Krishna is, what my relationship with him is, and how to act in that relationship. In just a moment, I can make the divine commonplace, and in my unconsciousness, let the entire transcendental world slip away. So one other thing that happened, I'll just finish this little madras section and then we can continue. I was going to continue tomorrow morning with the last section instead of going on in the afternoon. Prabhupada got this amazing vituperative letter. It was from his godbrother while he was in Madras. It was unbelievable. This is what his godbrother wrote to him. Revered Swamiji, I listened to your discourse on Bhakti at Rajeshwara Kalyana Mandapam on the 12th. I am filled with doubts on the following. Your disciples dance with the Hare Krishna mantra. Are they really God intoxicated, as Lord Chaitanya says? Have you, Swamiji, really got free of your ego? If so, why do you say, I challenge? And why are words like I and my on your lips? Why do you use a cushion, unlike a real yogi? Did Lord Chaitanya use a cushion? Why do you wear a gold ring and a gold wristwatch? Are you not free from material attachment? Did you visit Lord Chaitanya Krishna temple at the Gaudiya Math? If not, why not? The purest Vaishnava cult is indwelling there with the pious Swamijis, and Lord Krishna is dwelling also there. Melodious sound from your throat is absent, but a harsh, undivined sound comes out. Is there any divinity in your person? I doubt it. One is disgusted on hearing your speech. So, Prabhupada was a bit surprised and hurt by receiving this letter, but he instructed us not to get involved in conversations with his godbrothers, because he didn't want us to commit offenses to them. But he avoided them, and he also wanted us to avoid them. But of course, they were not all like that. There was one godbrother, B.B. Puri Maharaj, who actually invited Prabhupada very humbly to come and visit his ashram, which was in Vishakhapatnam. So perhaps we can continue from that point tomorrow. This is, it's right on the beach, Vishakhapatnam. Unless there's some more comments or questions, we'll pick this up and finish the story. Thank you very much for your attention. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.